Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline. We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings. It's Farrell on the bench. I believe in whipped cream with everything. Pain-free Friday, Pharrell's doing out minutes on the mahogany, waxing it up, 100, 200. It's Pharrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out. The bad seed, the broken day, the bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad attitudes, bad taste, bad lot, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live in the Magic City Studios of the Pharrell Appalachian, right across the river and through the woods. From where Granny loves toking on that lemon train wreck before she hits the sack in New York City. The Big Apple. Ooh. People dressed in plastic bags, directed traffic, some kind of fashion shake it up. Should be all my friend to come around, flat the party up. Rats on the west side, bed bugs uptown. What a mess. This town's inside of my brain. Splattered all over Manhattan. Should be check it. Ooh. Hey, what's gigging? I'm Pharrell with Mafia tonight. And the number's 844-843-6879. Can you believe it? Baseball is back. Second half underway in all its glory after another torturous week of sports during the All-Star break. I am not one for the Monday night home run derby, the Tuesday American League stomp session every year of the National League, and then Wednesday, obviously, we had NBA, thank God. Thursday, nothing after the Yankees and Red Sox got postponed because of the COVID. And then finally, it's Friday and baseball has started again. Something to cling to. Obviously, I was into the Open Championship in Royal St. George's. And that's going to be fantastic Saturday and Sunday with the heavies on the leaderboard. Later this hour, we'll talk to Andrew Drano Lano, former caddy. You see him on Coast to Coast. You hear him on the bench. He's going to talk about the second round of the Open Championship, and the leader is still King Louis. Your boy Louis Oosthuizen has a two-stroke lead after the second round of the Open, and I took him Wednesday before it started at 30-1. Obviously, by Friday, those odds dropped dramatically, but I got him at 30-1, which is cool. We'll see if he can get it done, but I got to tell you, he played fantastic golf, and he still only leads by two. That spells trouble to me when you are setting the all-time record for lowest two-round open score ever, and you're still only up by two strokes. You got problems right around the corner doing push-ups. We'll talk to Drano Lano about that later this hour. I was noticing one game tonight, a couple games that stood out to me. One, the Padres just mauling the Nationals. And Cronenworth hit for the cycle in that game. Myers hit a Slam Diego special, the Grand Slam. And they are just kicking ass and taking names. I mean, they put up 19 runs on the Nationals tonight at Nationals Park. I didn't see that coming. I don't think anybody did. And they're just knocking the Nats' teeth out of their mouth. 19-5. As I mentioned, Cronenworth hit for the cycle. He was an all-star. We welcome our radio affiliate, SiriusXM, Channel 204. Mightier 1090 in San Diego near Tijuana. Do you wanna? Sports Map, Sports Byline, Armed Forces Radio. It's Pharrell on a bench on a pain-free Friday. So, yeah, 19 runs they put on him. And then the other game that I noticed, the Mets, Francisco Lindor, left the game against the Pirates with an injury after an at-bat in that game. Not only that, they're losing to the Pirates again. Remember, they split with the Pirates before the break at Citi Field in four games, 2-2. And I think the Pirates won the last game on Sunday. That was the game Mafia went to, 6-5 after the Mets led the game 5-0. And then now they're playing at PNC this weekend. And the Pirates are already leading the Mets and beating them. I mean, it's unbelievable. What do you think Lindor's injury? Do you know what it is, Mafia?
No, I haven't seen a final report yet on what it may be. I mean, that's always worrisome when a guy swings like that. Maybe it's just a tweak. You hope it's just like a little tweak, something that you get over because, you know, it could be some kind of lat or back pull, and those things could linger and cost you, you know, a big chunk of your season.
Freddie Freeman with his 20th home run of the season. They're talking about, is he going to get a long-term deal in Atlanta? They cannot let Freddie Freeman walk. Why go see the Braves if all their players are gone or injured? In other words, Acuna's done for a year. What else do they got? Nobody's going to pay big money to see Albies play. They're paying to watch Freddie Freeman. He's the face of the ball club. We got a lot going on tonight on the bench.
Don't have to listen to Sports Grid. You can always go to a horse stable, find one with shoes, pry one off, and hang it over your door. Or you can get the winning edge
right here.
And you won't take a hoof to the head.
No!
This is the Sports Grid Radio Network.
All right, Pharrell on the bench. So they're fighting Bellator up in Mohegan again. Boy, that's worked out well for them. I mean, I don't know. They don't have fans there, right, Mafia? So it's not like they can make money off of it, but they got the TV broadcast there every time they have a card.
They start letting some fans in there in June, I believe.
Oh, so now they do have fans.
Yeah, I think over the last 2 months they have. I think this is the last one there, at least for now. So I'm pretty sure the next one in the beginning of next month goes out to the Forum out in L.A. for a title fight.
So I'm, like, watching the fight right now. I have absolutely no clue who these two guys are fighting. As you know, I just like violence. So I just saw a guy get dropped. I saw that left cross, knocked that dude clean out. He got up, though, so he got out of the round. But I have no idea who either of these fighters are. Mafia doesn't seem very excited about the fights either.
I don't know these ones either yet. This is one of those cards where it's not stacked from top to bottom. So this is two guys I've never heard of. Sometimes those are the best fights. Sometimes they're the hungriest. But I have no idea who these guys are either yet.
So in other words, I'm watching fights all night with a bunch of people I've never heard of. Again, I'm watching these boring-ass fights.
Now you'll know the co-main as your boy, Matt Mitrione. Other than that, you're not going to know anyone probably.
Yeah, I know Matt. I know Matt. He's been on the show, but it's hard for me to get into it when I'm watching people I've never seen or never heard of before. It's kind of a drag. I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm more on this or more on the baseball that's going on. I was so desperate for sports because of the week. I hate All-Star Week. I hate every year. That All-Star Week is just such a kick in the onions with no sports. I know there was NBA. I got to tell you, I mean, I thought the NBA Game 4 was really good, but I can't believe they have all these, 4 days off between every game? I mean,
no, you forget about it already because it was so long ago. 2 days ago is forever in these series.
I mean, it was Wednesday night. They don't play till tomorrow night. I just think it kills it. Like, I forget they're even playing. It takes so long. And they did that Wasn't it Sunday? Yeah. Wednesday, now Saturday. Like, I mean, Christ almighty, just, you know, every 4 days, it's terrible. It's ridiculous. I don't care about the national television audience or the network's desires or wants or wishes. I just think there should never be. You know how funny it is when they play every other night through the entire playoffs, every other night, and then when they get to the finals, they play every 4 days. Why is that? Every single game is, every series is every other day. And so every night there's games. And then I remember when Chris Paul said it, he's like, you know, I don't know what to do with myself because there's no games on. Because once they get to the finals, obviously there's no other teams playing, fair enough. But when the playoffs start, there's a game every single night. And then they get to the next round, there's a game every single night. Then you get to the conference finals or whatever, it's every other night, right? And then they get to the finals and it's every 4 days. Like, are you kidding me? Like, who even cares anymore by the time they play the game? And then the bottom line is, I guess that, you know, Saturday night, tomorrow night, that game, game five, you know, it's almost like a matter of winner takes all, because what is it? 79% of them that win it go on to win the title. It's like, I guess, we saw it today on Coast to Coast. What is it? Like, I don't know, 22 of the last 29 that won the game won the finals. I mean, it's crazy. So I can look that number up. I mean, I have it somewhere in here. But the bottom line is that that's what happens. Whoever wins that game five, it's just on. And they take control, and that's that. So I hear this. It's the 30th time in the NBA Finals that the series has been tied 2-2. Winner of game five has gone on to win 21 of the previous 29, which is 72%. So, I mean, that's a heavy number, 72%. That's a lot. And in terms of, you know, percentages of who wins it. But it's not to say it's a done deal. I think, you know, maybe you're buying into that a little bit too much if you think, oh, well, whoever wins this game is going to win it all. Anything could happen. They could, you know, let's say the Suns win game five and then the Bucks win game six. Who knows who wins game seven? Everybody thought the Nets were going to win game seven against the Bucks, and the Bucks went into the Barclays and they beat them. Now, it was a little different, I thought, with, no Kyrie Irving and Harden on one leg and Durant having to carry the team on his back. That was the end of them. You don't have those problems in this series. You don't have those injuries. You don't have anybody out that affects their bottom line of winning or losing. Both of these teams are, it would appear to me, locked and loaded for game five and ready to go. And so far, nobody's like out of any significance, right? So there you go. I think it's going to be incredible. I stand by what I said, though, on Coast to Coast and on the bench. Like, the Suns blew that game. They blew it. I mean, they had the game. There is no game that you'll watch all year long. I mean, what, one of every 20? Where a team shoots 50% from the floor, 30% from downtown, the other team shoots 40% from the floor and 24% from downtown, and you lose the game. Bottom line is that Chris Paul's turnovers cost him the game. Chris Paul's terrible game cost him the game. And the fact that nobody else besides Booker did anything, I'll give you Crowder's little, 15 spot. But everybody else, the best you can do is Cam Johnson's 10 or whatever. He hit 4 of 6 shots, 2 of 4 threes. They took him out of the game with 3 minutes left, whatever, something like that. He wasn't on the floor at the end of the game. Meanwhile, he's the only other guy hitting shots. I could never figure that out. So I said that last night over and over on the air. And I said it today on the TV side. Like, I don't understand your rotations when Payne's not hitting, Bridges is not hitting, Ayton's not hitting, and then Crowder's the only guy. Meanwhile, Crowder's dying every other play with some kind of, you know, malady. He's got all these, he got smacked in the face, he got tripped, he got bumped, he's laying on the court. Every time he gets touched, he dives and falls down. I need somebody to score buckets. I need somebody to hit buckets. I need somebody to put the ball in the hole. And they were getting no calls. So, no calls whatsoever. And so they, you got to win in spite of the refs. If you're not getting any calls, and I mean, like on a couple of those Paul turnovers, he got mauled. He got tripped, mauled, knocked down to the ground twice. Both of them led to layups and dunks and breakaways and transition. Both of the turnovers that he had, which, you know, both times he got mauled. Bottom line, no calls. So, all right, no calls. You're not going to get any calls on the road. All right, fair enough. So we used to have that problem, Mafia, in our, you know, playoff games, championship games. We'd call a timeout and we'd say, we got to win in spite of them. We got to win in spite of the refs. We have to hit buckets. We got to score. We're not getting any calls. We're not getting to the line. No one's scoring. We got to score. We got to put the ball in the hole. So who's hot? Give them the rock and let them go to work. And if everybody else is going to stand around and pick their nose in their underwear, then get out of the way, set a screen, bang the boards, crash the boards, do something, because the Suns should have won that game and they blew it. With people. Everybody expects every team in the effing league to win the Super Bowl. One team wins. The rest of them lose.
Nothing for you.
How about that? One last indignity.
So the Rays tied up the Braves. They were down 6-4. It's 6-all now in the eighth. Bottom eight, two outs, nobody on. And here steps up Panda, Pablo Sandoval. I mean to tell you, Mafia, your boy is pushing 3 1/4. This dude is so fat. I mean, I almost fell over when I saw how fat he was. Now, obviously, he can still hit. And he's still got a job in the bigs, so he gets the last laugh. Fair enough. He just flew out to center. But I mean to tell you, this guy is fatter than a Brinks truck. I mean, this guy, oh, my God, is he enormous. Like, his gut is, he's got, like, Santa Claus should be fired. They should actually hire a Panda to do it. He's got the biggest belly I've ever seen in my life. Oh, my God. God, is he enormous.
I mean, he was never a small boy to begin with. So, you know, now as you get out of shape, as you get older, it just gets worse and worse.
You're telling me. I just saw him. I'm watching. You don't have the game. I saw him. I almost, you heard me in the break. I was like, Jesus, holy shack. This guy is just absolutely gigantic. He just is an absolute slob. I don't care what anybody says. They'll be like, Ferrell, you can't be making fun of fat people. Whatever. I'll make fun of whoever I want. Here's the deal. Speaking of Brinks trucks, I was watching this. Have you watched the show on Netflix, the Heist show, Mafia? Have you heard about that one?
Yeah, it keeps popping up, but I have not checked it out yet.
Okay, well, I remember this story of this chick. I actually remember it from back in the day. It was in like 95, 96, something like that in Vegas. And like I was living in Vegas in 93. And then I moved to, from there I moved to LA and or San Francisco in 94. And then I was doing the national show from that point forward, right? I was living out in LA. And I remember this story when it happened because they actually, you know, it ran on every, literally every television in America. They ran with this story over and over. And I mean, America's Most Wanted, FBI shows, FBI's Most Wanted, all of those shows, every one of them ran the story of the chick, Little John, who they feature on this show. And I'm not spoiler alert anything. This was a national true story that was documented, and she was top 10 most wanted in the world. So she actually, with her boyfriend, who was like an older guy, right? This older guy, like brainwashed her into believing that, you know, he loved her. And he was twice her age, and she was 21. And he convinced her that he loved her. And they started, you know, having this whirlwind romance. And they, the bottom line was he planned all along to get this chick to work for the Loomis, you know, which is the same thing as the Brinks, like the Loomis, you know, armored cars. Armored trucks, they go and they drop off money, right? And they collect money and they do bank machines, casinos. They take money from here, A to B, right? So he convinces her to get a job at Loomis, and the chick gets a job at Loomis because she's good looking or whatever. When she was 21, she was good looking. The story doesn't end well for her in terms of her looks, but fair enough. Time's the enemy of all. But here's the deal. She ends up working at Loomis, right? And then it turns out the guy, he had robbed a Loomis truck like 25 years before that, when he was like 20 something, and he got caught, right? And he got sent to, I guess he killed the Loomis driver, and he robbed the Loomis truck and killed the guy, the two money guys, killed him and the driver, and got life, right? So the guy goes to Folsom and he's serving life. Guy starts writing poems, right? And he starts writing all these poems and books, and everybody falls for his act. And he's, you know, he's got like 25 names, and he's got this, you know, author name he rolls with, like something like Pablo Alguio or some. He had some funky name he used. Anyway, that wasn't his real name. His real name was Solis. And the guy eventually, so many people were inspired and moved by his poetry. I kid you not. And they had all these people that loved his poetry, and all these people stood up for him and talked for him and spoke for him. And through the parole board, they got this guy. He got out of jail, and he was serving life for like murder. And he got out, you know, armed robbery, murder. And he got out of Folsom, and he ended up, you know, he had spent 20 years in prison. So when he got out, the first thing he wanted to do, because he had been busted robbing one of them, he wanted to go finish the deal. He still wanted to rob the Loomis armored trucks full of money. So he convinced this girl, and you know, he had an affair with her forever. Like he was reading poems to her. He was, you know, he had all this witchcraft he was into, voodoo and all this other nonsense. And then eventually he convinces her to get a job at Loomis. And then he trains her like a dog. He brainwashes her and hypnotizes her, and convinces her to steal $3 million. And back then, that was, you know, a lot of money in 96, whatever. So maybe it was 95 that they, I could be wrong about the years, but I think it was 95 that they did it. And what they did, Mafia, was like I said, I'm not telling some movie story or some story that you got to see to believe, because you can't imagine. This was like a story that everybody knew about. this was a story that it had already happened and it already was true and documented. And I remember it when it happened because I remember them looking for this chick and this guy. So what happened was he convinced it, you know, he knew what he was doing and that's what he was. He was a thief and he planned it out and he studied it. All the drop points, where they did it, when they did it, the routes they drove, what time they did it, what casinos they hit, how many ATM machines they filled. The guy knew everything. Like, he planned it out, like, brilliantly, like, down to a T, A to Z. He had everything down. And eventually he trained this girl like a dog to know every move, every turn, every day, every hour, every minute, every second, every road they went on. I mean, everything. She knew everything. And she would write it down and study it. And they planned this thing for like a year. And meanwhile, they were living in Vegas in some hotel. And they had stolen money to get, through it all. They stole like 30 grand to get through it all. So they lived on that and they got through it, right? And then eventually they did it. They robbed the circus and they stole 3 million. And when the guys were in the circus doing the 15 ATM machines, loading them up, she was driving off with 3 million that was in the truck already. They did. She waited. She drove the truck. So they went in to fill up machines. She drove down. She left the circus and drove to this warehouse. They packed the money. They shipped it via, they used a service like whatever, UPS or whatever, air freight. They did air freight. They shipped it into the middle of the country, and they took a plane, then they took a train, then they took a bus, and then they eventually ended up where the money was. They got the money. They went to a hotel. They transferred it into suitcases. They moved from there. Got on planes, kept flying around. They went to New Orleans, then they went to Miami, then they went to St. Martin, then they went to Amsterdam, and they were on the land. He knew where to go where they wouldn't be extradited if they were caught. And I mean to tell you, this chick and this guy, it was the craziest thing. They got away with it. Like, they stole it. I mean, they were on the lam literally till 2005, and she ended up having a baby with him. He had all kinds of other women too in on it. She was living with him and another woman. They were having, like, you know, the three-way action. It was all going on. She was like, what is happening here? Meanwhile, he had all this money, $3 million. And for the most part, they lived the longest in St. Martin in the Caribbean, in the Lesser Antilles. And eventually she got sick of the act with the other girl and her being like the third wheel. So she moved to Amsterdam and had a kid and then met some other guy and had like a family. I mean, this story is the craziest thing you ever heard in your life.
You don't have to listen to Sports Grid. You can always go downtown.
Hey, babe, you want to go out?
Scour the sidewalks, find a penny, and pick it up. Or you can get the winning edge right here. And you won't get Tomey. This is the Sports Grid Radio Network.
All right, so I'm going to bring on Drano here in a second. I just want to wrap this up really quick. So what happened was the chick... she eventually leaves this guy in St. Martin, ends up going to Amsterdam with him, whatever. And then they end up breaking up, right? So she ends up having the kid by herself, leaves him with nothing. She didn't leave with any of the 3 million. He just said, get out then. See you later. She went and had a kid with his kid, the guy that she robbed the 3 million with. It's his kid. He's like, I don't want it. Go ahead. See you later. She ends up living in Amsterdam for like 10 years, raises this kid. And the kid's a little kid, and she's got some other boyfriend she hooks up with, and they're like a family or whatever, but she's living on fake passports and fake identity and everything else. Eventually, she says, screw this. I can't do this anymore. She tells her kid what she did and tells him the truth. She says, I'm going back to America. I'm going to turn myself in. So she hires some high-priced lawyer, comes back to Vegas, turns herself in, eats it, and because she turned herself in, without any aid, with a lawyer. The charges, a lot of them were dropped down. She ended up getting 5 years in federal for stealing the $3 million. And whatever, she got embezzlement and falsifying passports. She got 5 years. She could have got 25 years for everything she did. She stole $3 million with this dude. But how about this? Here's the kicker. They never found the guy, Solis. He's been like on America's top 10, like, or FBI's top 10 fugitive forever. And no one ever caught him. To this day, they never found him. They don't know if he's dead, alive, or gone, or blown away in the wind. He got away with the $3 million. They never caught him. And she ended up doing five in federal and then got out. And now she's like a nurse and lives in America. And her kid is like grown up and he's a teenager, like a young adult now. It's the craziest story you ever seen in your life. But you talk about crazy, living on the lam, a fugitive. I mean, she did it forever. And that's crazy. And then she turned herself in. She couldn't live with it anymore. She couldn't get any more passports with fake names. Anyway, Drano's with us now to talk about the Open Championship. It's been incredible. Andrew Leno, former PGA caddy. I got to tell you, Drano, that I said this earlier. You know, I was on Louis at 30-1. I picked him to win it, and he's been incredible. Two-day record, 129. He's been playing great golf, very consistent, very clean. But after all that and breaking the record and as great as he's played, his lead is only two strokes. So for me, I'm like scared to death that he's not going to win this one either. Just like the U.S. and just like the PGA, he finished second. He's going to be right there no matter what because he's playing great golf. But that lead is precarious at best, Drano.
You know what? You make a good point. And you got the, you know, the young gun Morikawa trying to chase him down, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson. I mean, it just keeps going on down the list. So, I mean, no, it's not going to be easy. And it's been, honestly, I mean, really unlike most of the, quote, opens. I mean, they have perfect weather over there. They'll lighten the place up. I mean, they're shooting the grass off that place. So, anyway, getting back, though, to your pick, King Louis. So, if King Louis wins, you got to get a bottle of King Louis and you got to, you know, divvy it up with all of us, don't you?
I mean, I hope so at 30-1 because those odds dropped dramatically after Thursday. And I got in on him on Wednesday and I said he'd win it. And then I picked the field. I took no chalk, no great names, no big names. I was on anyone that wasn't, you know, Spieth or Thomas or DJ or Rahm. All they do in these tournaments, Drano, every major, every single one, all they do is these golf analysts and these sports center people and all the rest, they line up and get on their knees for these big names. They'll throw Ricky Fowler out there every time there's a tournament. Christ, that guy, my friends can beat him. All I know is, they always pick nothing but the big names, and then they go with Koepka and DeChambeau. It's never anybody but big names that has a chance. Meanwhile, none of them get it done. I mean, I won't doubt what Rahm did, and you know, I think they're all great golfers. But when you're playing in those links, as you and I have talked about, I'm on all the no names. I'm on the Euros. I'm on guys, Englishmen. I'm on South Africans. I'm on guys that know how to play links golf. They grew up on it, played their whole life on it.
And you know what? It's all about the bounces, and it's a funny, different game over there. And I'm with you 100%. I mean, these chalk people, I mean, that's all they really know. So, I mean, betting and handicapping golf, let's be honest, it's a crapshoot. It's just that way. I mean, you just can't really predict. One week something makes sense, the next week it doesn't. But, you know, with that, I mean, I'm with you on the long shots. This course has had crazy stuff happened, unusual winners, the last two that won, it was their first. So obviously Louis got one in his pocket, but you start looking at someone like Morikawa, who made some adjustments after finishing 71st last week, you know, in the Scottish Open, and he's first, you know, with, you know, gained approach, you know, strokes gained approach to the green. The guy's a fantastic iron player. I don't think he's going to let Louis, you know, just walk away with it either.
Well, I got to tell you, he's very dangerous, and I'm well aware of that. I'm looking at, like, because I understand, I'm with you, Speed, Johnson, they're all, I mean, kick ass. But, I'm still Dylan Ferrelli, your boy Fratelli, Harding, the South African that I'm sure they grew up together. Look at all the Englishmen. Sullivan, no one's ever heard of. People have heard of Paul Casey forever. Danny Willett in it. You got Canadians and Hughes and Connors playing well. How about the last champ, Lowry? He's playing well. There's guys like Grillo, the German, Seam. No one's ever heard of him. Harding and Fratelli, like I said. I mean, it's crazy, the no-names. They're right there, all those no-name guys that no one's ever heard of. They're all in it.
And the interesting thing is, with that, so with the perfect weather, I mean, Louis and Colin have kind of stretched the field out. So when you start looking down that list, well, you know, how far can someone come to try to catch Louis? I mean, it's going to, if the weather continues like it is, which it's forecasted to do that, I mean, anybody that's not five under or better is going to have a hard time catching Mr. Oosthuizen. I mean, or anyone else for that matter. It's just too many people to pass in too short a time. So it's going to be really interesting to see tomorrow, like, who can get out. And maybe someone flashes a 63. I think Rahm putted for 63 today. So it's out there. You know, you throw a 7 on a 4, and you're 11 all of a sudden. And then, you know, Louis just teeing off. Because, as you know, he's going to tee off about dinner time tomorrow, their time. It doesn't get dark till 10 o'clock.
Well, explain to me, I think the weather's ruined the Open this year. Now, I still think it's exciting. I still think it's good golf. I like Lynx golf better than any golf anywhere in the world. I love this. As you know, this is my favorite tournament. So, but the deal is, I hate it when it's sunny and it's dry and it's not, you know, I want violent wind, rain, pelting, cold. I want 50 to 60 degrees. They're freezing. They're wussies. They're crying to their mommies. When it's hot and sunny, it makes the fescue easier to get out of. It makes the ball roll longer and further. And that's why the scores are so low. I think the weather has ruined this Open.
And the big thing is, you just, you know, just really explained it. They're comfortable. Playing good golf relies on being comfortable. They're out there in short sleeve shirts and vests and whatever, and this is just like a ho-hum day walking down the street. So, I mean, this is breeding on obviously some extremely low scores. It doesn't look like the weather will turn. I'm with you. I've been in it. And I'll be honest with you, it is tough to work in as a caddy. You got to have you got to be an octopus out there. You're trying to hold the umbrella. You got, you know, rain suits. You know, you're trying to keep the clubs dry, you know, everything else. I mean, it in the wind, like you said, I've seen the wind snap a couple umbrellas where we couldn't even use the umbrella. So we got soaked anyway. So, I mean, that's kind of been taken away this year. I mean, you have to, you know, say that it is fun to watch. It is it's torture on the players, but as a sideline fan, it's interesting to see how they all make adjustments in those difficult conditions.
Do you think how low are they going to go? Is it going to end up between 15 and 18 if they've already got it at 11 and 9? I mean, if you're at 11 after 2, I know Saturday and Sunday will be a little tougher with pin placements maybe, but In essence, isn't it going to be somewhere around 15 to 18?
I mean, I think you're right in the ballpark there, and you're right. I mean, now that the field's shortened and they only have 60 or so players, they're going to toughen up the pins because they're not worried about pace of play. And, you know, they're going to kind of stretch the course now because there's only 36 holes left. So the greens are going to get stretched. And I heard, you know, they're putting really slow because they're afraid. If, you know, they cut them too low, they'll lose them because this heat is so unusual over there. I mean, it's unreal. I mean, the weather forecast is just, it hasn't been this way there for a long time, according to the natives. So, I mean, with that and the lack of wind, I mean, even if the wind could kick up to get it to 20 or 30, then that would make it extremely hard, along with a hard pin. So I'm with you. I'm guessing, you know, at this point, I'm going to say I'm, you know, 16, 17 under, and if someone gets on fire, they might be able to get it to 20.
Have you ever seen Phil Mickelson play worse?
I mean, I don't know, you know, what will Phil do, right? That's what everybody's saying. So, I mean, I don't know what to think, you know, about that. I mean, obviously it was a waste of jet fuel for him to go over there, but, I mean, he's got to go over. I mean, he's a champion. And you know what? Phil gives his best effort everywhere he goes. I don't really know. To me, it just, when I see those kind of scores and what I saw, he obviously didn't drive it very well. Because you can't survive in that fescue, in that grass at all, and he obviously was in it. Because, I mean, he's always going to chip and putt and be good around the greens, but when you're chipping and putting for pars and bogeys, that isn't going to do too great on the PGA Tour, as you know.
How about DeChambeau? With all the hype he gets, has it finally gotten to him the I have 45 seconds. Has it gotten to him that the fighting with Koepka has finally got inside his head and it's ruined his game?
I mean, something's gotten off with him because, I mean, the other day, as you know, he kind of threw his product sponsor under the bus, and you just don't do that. I mean, he's still a young guy. He's still immature. He's still trying to figure things out. I'm not going to make any excuses, but, you know, the pressure, U.S. Open champ from a couple of years ago, et cetera, all rolled into one. Some days, you know, you're just not ready to take that on.
All right, Drano, enjoy the Open on Saturday morning and Sunday morning. Let's hope it's a fantastic finish. Hopefully I'll hit this bet with Louie and everybody will pop some corks. My man, thanks for coming on the bench, yeah. Drano. Love you.
You got it, Farrell. Thank you. Have a good one. Good luck.
All right, Andrew Leno, former PGA caddy, a regular on Coast to Coast and on the bench. We'll keep rocking on a pain-free Friday. They were going through the motions. They were lifeless.
I don't like that or condone that at all.
I play it straight up, yo.
All right, so now I'm watching this, the main event, this champion Velasquez against the third-ranked fighter Kielholtz, and they're in the first round of their main event at Mohegan Sun, and just kind of some, you know, swing kicks and nothing major, no real damage, nothing significant in terms of landing strikes, or nobody's gone down yet. There's been nothing on the mat, so the first round is kind of feeling each other out, right? Are you watching Mafia, or am I the only one watching these fights?
No, I got it on.
Aren't you the fight guy?
I've been watching it since mid-June. I mean, waiting, you know, lead up to this, because we had those no names before I changed it, and then before I get back, Mitchell lost that quick. So I've been watching this one from the beginning, watching the backstory in these two. So it's been a, you know, like you said, a very feeling each other out so far first round. When you got five rounds, you don't rush into it. Three rounds, you might make a little bit more of a, you know, push in the first round, but this one you got time.
That little chick's the champion?
No, the taller one is.
Oh. So wait, it says number Velasquez three, Kielholtz. What?
Velasquez is the champ. Velasquez.
Oh, the tall one's Velasquez. Oh, so Kielholtz is the little one. All right. So there you go. Velasquez is the tall chick. I was going to say, I was like, is that little chick's the champion? Because I can't figure it out because she looks like Velasquez. I can't figure it out with the chick with the braids, where she's from. She doesn't look like a Velasquez to me. All right, we got another hour on a bench.